Support for this episode of Judaism Unbound comes from the Ashman Family JCC in Palo Alto, California, whose vision is to be the architects of the Jewish future. The Ashman Family JCC empowers you to experience Jewish paths toward a life of joy, purpose, and meaning through innovative Jewish learning and wellness programs, community building, and initiatives to develop the next generation of Jewish leaders. Learn more at www.paloaltojcc.org. This is Judaism Unbound, episode 359, Spiritual Direction. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofberg.
And today we are continuing our journey and our exploration through Jewish spirituality. Last week, we spoke to Josh Fagelson, the president and CEO of the Institute for Jewish Spirituality, to try to get a view of the whole area. And today, we are going from the macro to the micro, talking about the role of the spiritual director. We're going to get deep into that and what that is all about. It's basically somebody who helps you one-on-one to explore your spiritual life. Before we get into that conversation, just a reminder that if you are listening to this episode the day that it comes out or the next day, these are the last days of 2022. So an early wish for a happy new year. Also, a lot of people like to make their end of year contributions late in the month of December. So we hope you'll consider making a donation to Judaism Unbound at judaismunbound.com/donate. Whether your contribution is large or small, we appreciate any amount that you're able to contribute. It really helps us continue to make this podcast and continue to do all the other things that we are experimenting with. And if you are listening to this podcast a few days after it comes out and it's already the new year, you can still go to judaismunbound.com/donate and make a one-time donation, or you could also sign up to make a small monthly donation, which is a really cool way to support this work. It helps us know how much money to expect every month, and it's just a way of being an ongoing part of this Judaism Unbound community. So thanks so much for considering those donations. And now back to the subject of Jewish spirituality. Many Judaism Unbound listeners already know our guest today, Wendy Bernstein Lash. Even though she has technically never been a guest on the Judaism Unbound podcast before, that's because you might have heard her voice on our special Elul Unbound podcast. Wendy Bernstein Lash has been a co-creator with us, especially with Lex, of the Elul Unbound experience for many years now. And so we're so pleased to be able to finally talk to her about her day job as a spiritual director, which she's been doing for over two decades. In addition to being a spiritual director, Wendy Bernstein Lash is also a meditation teacher, a mentor, a Pilates instructor, a Reiki practitioner, and the author of two CDs on meditation and chanting. She is the former co-director of the Morei Derech Jewish Spiritual Direction Training Program and the Yedidya Center for Jewish Spiritual Direction. Wendy Bernstein Lash also leads a contemplative chanting service at Congregation Etz Chaim in Palo Alto. So Wendy Bernstein Lash, finally, welcome to Judaism Unbound. It is so great to have you on the podcast.
Thanks, Dan. It's great to be here with you guys.
So let's start with a really simple question. I just really want to understand, when somebody says they're a spiritual director, what does that mean? What do they do? What is the concept behind it, and what is the day-to-day of it?
It's a great question. First of all, the term spiritual director, spiritual direction, actually comes from the Christian contemplative tradition. You know, in certain streams of Judaism, there are other terms that are used. I use it because I do a lot of interfaith work, and it's a term that's understandable. But I actually like the term spiritual guidance, because nobody's directing anybody. The idea behind spiritual direction is, where are you directing your intention? Where are you inclining? And from Christianity, it's towards God, which also becomes problematic with people who are not God-oriented. So spiritual direction or spiritual guidance is typically a one-on-one practice where a person comes to a spiritual director or spiritual guide. It's a kind of a mentoring practice, because I'm not trying to impart wisdom on somebody. I'm trying to help them create a container where they get to explore their own understanding of themselves as a soul on a journey, an individual who's having lived experiences that they may not have had a chance to process, that are in that inner world, that spiritual world. It's like having a spiritual personal trainer. I don't do the work. But I'm there encouraging you to pay attention to what's coming up for you, what's your life. So I'm like a spiritual personal trainer. Anything that you spend time, that where you put time and attention to, will flourish and grow. So if you take some time to pay attention to your body and, you know, work it out, it's going to get stronger. If you take some time and pay attention to expanding your mind, you're going to have deeper thoughts. If you take time and you know, or just focusing on what's going on inside of me, what's getting sparked, what feels alive, where am I feeling certain experiences are charging me and other ones are shutting me down. If you start looking at that, you're going to be more aware of it. You're going to be more attentive to it, and you're going to be able to grow your capacity in that area. So that's how I see spiritual guidance or spiritual direction.
Okay. So you really helped us get clear on the guidance part, the director, the personal trainer, which I really like. Like when I think about a personal trainer, I think of somebody who's like really physically fit themselves. And I wonder to what extent that's also true of spiritual personal trainers. Like you should expect that somebody is very spiritually fit themselves. But that raises for me the question of when we talk about the spiritual side of the phrase, what are we really talking about? Because, you know, what comes to my mind is like, and you also said something about the spiritual world. I don't think you meant it this way, but initially I was thinking of, you know, angels and whatnot. That's what's in the spiritual world, but I don't think that that's what we're talking about. So for those folks who don't really live in this spirituality experience part of the world, what are we talking about exactly? And yeah. And I guess, how is it different from things like wisdom or therapy? Or maybe it isn't so different. I'm curious if it's a word for things that we might know in other contexts, or yeah. It really is a particular realm, and can we understand that realm a little better?
I mean, I think partly we as moderns like to break things up, like here's the psychological, here's the spiritual, here's the physical. And so I push back against that a bit because we're holistic creatures. So, you know, the psychological and the spiritual and the physical, they actually all intertwine. And conceptually, spirituality is like understanding that we're part of something bigger. So here's Dan, here's Lex, here's Wendy. We have this individual orientation, this individual lived experience. And yet we are not alone. We don't operate. We are related upon. And at some deeper level, spirituality says we're actually all connected. I think it's like the Shema, right? This oneness that Judaism has. How are we connected to this oneness, to all life, to all creation? Judaism has a lot to say about that. So in general, it's acknowledging that we aren't this island that lives apart from everything else. And how do we relate to that? How do we explore that? And then another layer of it for me and how it shows up, because that's a concept, but how it shows up is, what is your lived experience? So you, Dan, walk around and you're doing things and you're having experiences about that. You're having thoughts about it. You're having maybe even physical reactions to it. Oh, I don't like that. And you have tightness in your body or whatever. And then when do you have a chance to explore that? So for somebody who's spiritual but not religious, that's a great way to like, what's going on inside of you in this present moment, or that you're bringing into this present moment? Because spiritual guidance and spiritual directions are very present oriented. And that's one thing that differentiates it between psychology, which looks back for the most part to precedents and experiences that brought you to this moment that you might be bringing in. We still look at that in spiritual guidance and spiritual direction, but we're trying to stay very focused in the present of what's going on right now. What's your lived experience? What's juicy for you? What feels like it needs more attention? So both, it's part of connecting out to the bigger and connecting in to the inner.
So I have really spent very little time thinking about the director part of spiritual director before, so I'm really grateful to you. I mean, I guess I've never had a problem with it because it was almost living in a different corner of my mind than other forms of director that are like a person in charge of something, right? Like I was thinking of it maybe because I've done, you know, Jewish spiritual direction when I've been the person receiving it. I was thinking of it as like kavanah, like it means direction, like intention. I was thinking of it as somebody who spiritually steers, that kind of direct, like a car, a steering wheel is directing. it's not accelerating you forward. It's not the gas or the brake that is making you stop or making you go. It's just pointing you, right? And that's what I think. So when I think of my own spiritual director, Shia Eisenberg, I'm going to say him directly. Not directly. Oh, didn't even think about that. I'm going to mention him because I don't know that I have on the podcast before, but so much of my own ponderings, thinkings, ideas that I've had on this podcast, and what he always pushes me to do, not just ideas, you know, emotions, the inner work that is not just in my head, but in my body and in other respects, so much was shaped through my once a month, every month, spiritual direction meetings with Shia while I was in rabbinical school. It's not that he changed me. It's not that he was trying to make me think a different thing about God that I think. And I'm saying this about him, but I'm saying it because I think it's true of most spiritual directors. I think he was great, but I don't think he's atypical in that respect. A spiritual director is sort of taking the you that already is there and helping you underline, underscore, highlight certain things that you want to be. And then you press the accelerator. You go. Most of what our spiritual direction meetings were like, Lex, we're going to model a practice that I think is cool. I think is cool. We're going to do it now, a form of a meditation, a form of whatever. And then you're going to do it for the next few weeks. And then we're going to meet next month. And either it worked or it didn't work. It helped you unlock something spiritually or not. And then we'll keep on rolling. What's your body pushing yourself towards, Lex? What's your mind pushing yourself to think about? How do we actually make that more intentional? So I'm curious, is that steering wheel analogy I'm bringing on or off? And if you could talk a little just about the rhythm of spiritual direction, it's not just that people do this once. I think it's pretty common that people have a spiritual director that they continually connect with. What does it look like, not just day to day, but like month to month or year to year over the course of time?
There is, like in any field, there's a, you know, a continuum of what it looks like, and individuals do it their own way. Just to respond that I think someone who's in rabbinical training, there are different needs for that. When you're busy doing a lot of work to prepare yourself to offer experiences, spirituality, wisdom to a community or in some way to other people, attending to your own spirituality is really, really important. I feel very honored that I have rabbinical students and rabbis and priests and reverends in my practice, because I feel like we put a lot of pressure on people who are doing the outward. They need to have a place to attend to their own. So there's that, which is kind of can be slightly different from somebody who's coming who just wants to look at what's going on in their life. So I would probably personally be a little less directive, unless I would say, you know, I'm wondering about this practice. Would you like to try this together? Would you like to do this? I have to say one little anecdote. I only met Rev Zalman, who is the founder of Renewal Judaism. I know he's been talked about a lot on Judaism Unbound. But I met him once. I went and I was in Boulder and I said, can I have a session with you? I ended up having like 15 minutes and I was talking to him. It was early on when I was doing spiritual direction. He really didn't know me. And I said something about, I was trying to figure out where I was supposed to go. And he, you know, he closed his eyes as he used to do. And he thought, and he's like, I see you like a bus driver. I like that metaphor. And I've used that. It's like, yeah, I'm driving a bus, but I don't tell people where to get off. They get to choose what stop they're going to get off at, but they need somebody to help them do the driving. I don't know whether this practice or that practice or this orientation or doing this is good or not good for somebody. It's going to resonate for them. It's the right time for them. But I do have some skills in saying, I'm driving a bus, you know, get on the bus with me and see where you want to get off and see what speaks to you. And when people come and they're like, I don't know much, especially somebody who's newly Jewish or Jewish adjacent and wants to know more about Judaism, I have a lot of experience and practices that I can say, would you like to try this? Would you like to try this? So it can be much more. I'm just walking along with somebody and maybe even pointing out It's kind of like we don't see the sacred and the holy showing up in our lives sometimes, even though it's right there. We're focused on where it isn't showing up, what isn't working. And sometimes somebody can say, wow, you know, this seems like quite an amazing experience that you've had. Do you want to unpack it a little bit? Do you want to look at that a little bit more? How's that sitting with you? To concretize it, people do usually meet regularly, monthly, with a spiritual guide, a spiritual director, and whatever's on their mind that seems to have resonance, that they feel like, okay, this is where I talk about my spiritual life. This is where I process what's going on. This may be where I want to savor with somebody and just say, wow, do you know, I had this amazing experience. I was out taking a walk and time stopped. We don't always have a chance to talk to people just about those wonderful experiences that we have, because who do I talk to about this who isn't going to either make fun of it, not understand it, or try to tell me something about it and make meaning for me about it and not let me find my own meaning in it. So all of those are things that we can look at in spiritual direction.
You know, sometimes I am not sure whether I should characterize myself as spiritual but not religious or not spiritual. And I kind of think, like, you know, Lex will sometimes say, oh, this is a generational thing. You know, people in his generation, the millennials, they're much more comfortable with the idea of spiritual and not religious. I'm not sure that I completely buy that. Like, I think that there are more. I don't believe in these generational differences quite like that. I think certain generations have more people like Lex maybe than me or vice versa. But there are always people in every generation, I think, with these kinds of questions. And for me, like, the question that I'm asking about how what you're describing is that, yeah, I would really like that. I'm trying to understand what's the difference between what you're describing and what maybe I would call like a wisdom guide or something, just somebody who's like a really wise person. And I'm wondering a little bit in connection with what we've talked about with some other folks who are talking about spirituality in this particular series and also in other series, which I feel like a lot of mystics say that at a certain point, all mysticisms come to the same place, some deeper reality, which may come from some kind of source, whether a theistic sort of idea or even just some idea that we're all the stuff of the stars, right? Which I totally buy into. But I'm curious how you look at that and whether really what you're describing and what I might just see as somebody who's really a wise companion who helps me figure out how I'm going through my life, that's just a great thing, whatever you call it. But then I'm wondering too, kind of where the Jewish part might come in or where it does come in with your practice.
Yes and yes. You know, I want to say I'm a little challenged with calling myself a wisdom figure. That, you know, feels a little hubristic, but I have life experience, which then gives me wisdom. So from that standpoint, in, you know, being 62, I'm not 25. I've been through a lot of difficulties and seen that I can get through them. And so I have that kind of wisdom from somebody who is maybe seeing a life challenge for the first time and doesn't think that they're going to be able to make it through. I do mentoring as well as spiritual direction, and sometimes they look exactly the same. And sometimes the mentoring is a little bit more of that, hey, let me tell you what I know. And spiritual direction is a little less of that. And sometimes spiritual direction feels exactly the same. Like, and this is, I think, where it feels quite different from most therapy, is that there's a real boundary in the therapeutic relationship where I don't tell you about myself. And I tell people about my spiritual experiences and my life when it's in service of them. If I feel like sharing with somebody that I've been through something like this will help them, then I will do that. And so it's got a sense of it's a closer, a little bit more intimate, like having a wisdom figure. I mean, I consider Sylvia Boorstein a wisdom figure for me. I don't know if Sylvia, I can't remember if she's ever been on Judaism Unbound, but she's one of these pillars so she's a Buddhist meditator, but deeply Jewish, and has figured out how to navigate those two realms. And I do a lot of Buddhist meditation, so Sylvia's been a great wisdom figure for me. So, you know, going and having a conversation with Sylvia, now we're like pals. Like, and that's that, it's moved in that direction because I don't need her in the same way that I did 15 years ago. So it can be that, yes. And it can be, like I said, I have people in my practice who have been doing a lot of their own deep spiritual work and exploring their inner life and their relationship to the divine or God. And they don't need me in that capacity. They need, I just want to talk to somebody about this. And so it looks like that to somebody else. I would say, if you're searching for, what am I doing here? You know, how do I fit in the grand scheme of life, that you're a spiritual person? That's a spiritual, deep spiritual question. And what I've noticed is, when I first got into spiritual direction about 20 years ago, is most of the people that were in it were in midlife or beyond. And to my delight, there are more younger people coming into spiritual guidance and spiritual direction, because they're looking at those questions earlier in life, because the world's kind of effed up. And so we're looking at these existential questions that my generation, your generation, Dan, we're a little bit off, but that we didn't look at in our 20s and 30s, because life seemed like, hey, it's getting better every year, where this is a good trajectory that we're on. But now we're in a place where we're not so sure. We know they're not getting better, and we need to figure out, how do we live in this uncertain time that we live in? So 20s and 30s are looking like, what the hell? I need to talk to somebody about, how do I make meaning out of this? Is there wisdom in my tradition or in traditions in general? And that gets back to your piece there about, yes, I do believe that it all comes down to this core place, and that it does all come back to, sometimes I have deeper sense of resonance with people who aren't in Judaism, because we're talking at that level of, oh my God, you know, like, we're all connected here. What are we doing?
Sticky noting this, this is not the core of the question. I do, just because we've talked about this at a few points, mentally noting for Dan and I in the future to circle back to this question of, like, do different mysticisms boil down to one shared thing? I'm pretty strongly in the camp that they don't. And maybe that's surprising, because I do a lot of interfaith work and I'm in an interfaith relationship, and I, like, care very deeply and passionately about bridging across religious difference. But I would be less likely to go to, this is just me personally, I'm not saying this is a normative statement that should be true of others, I would not probably go to a spiritual director who is not Jewish. Like, it's not that every one of my spiritual direction sessions were, like, all about Jewish stuff. Sometimes we were just checking in about where I am in life and, you know, oh, Lex, you're turning 30, and, like, how do we think about aging and what does that mean? Like, I think people care about those things across all religious difference. And this was my chance to go from the place of, oh, I think about that when it's my birthday and then I don't, to, oh, I actually have a once a month chance to really consciously process what I want to be in my 30s, what it means to turn that page in life. It's a good set of questions about whether this boils down to a shared set of premises across traditions or not. The question I have is kind of a funny one. Sometimes with books or articles, people are like, what genre is this? I'm interested in what genre of experience spiritual direction is a part of. I think that one genre is like, oh, it's adjacent to therapy. It's adjacent, like, some of the things that Dan brought up. In my head, there's actually a way in which the genre it could be sort of part of, but also not, but sort of, is chavruta, which just means, in my head, one-on-one interaction. There's a way in which part of what I love about spiritual direction is actually independent of the spiritual and independent of the direction. It's just, I think it's really good for people to have a moment to be like, where am I, Lex, in the calendar of the year? Where am I, Lex, in the calendar of my life? I mentioned the turning 30 thing. Where am I, in all sorts of ways, as opposed to just being something I also love, one piece of a community. So much of Jewish life is all about being a part of a broader whole. And that's, to me, the biggest and most important part of Judaism. But I really do think that it matters a great deal for people on an individual level to be like, what are some of the key things popping up in my life? What are thematic challenges that pop up pretty regularly that might tell me something about how I am comfortable in the world and how I'm not? What are things I could lean into more? What are practices I could try? Like, that's all useful. And it's not so much about then having a spiritual director. It's just, I think it's great to have a person one-on-one that you engage with about that. The difference is that it's not fully horizontal. Chavruta, yeah. When you're learning with somebody, it's your equal partners. And spiritual direction is not the same as that. But I guess I'd love to hear, what is the one-on-one part of this? What is the individual experience part of this that might be, I don't know, a useful intervention to a community-centered Jewish life?
I love that because, first of all, I love Hevruta. It doesn't quite fit because there is that, as a Hevruta, I get as much space. We are in dialogue with one another. My orientation as a spiritual guide, a spiritual companion, is to create the container so that they can do their work. Maybe from a theological perspective, I'm creating container where they're in Hevruta with God, if that's their orientation. I never really thought about this. It just sparked me right now. Or they're in Hevruta with their own soul, which they're not necessarily having. We're just busy little moving on to this and that and not attending to what am I feeling? What am I experiencing? What haven't I processed? So it's maybe layers of Hevruta. There are times that it certainly does feel like Hevruta in that I can share and I am present. I am really listening. I'm inquiring of somebody. I'm asking them questions so that they can think about the questions that they might not have answered for themselves. And they can, oh, I never thought about that. I get that a lot when if I ask a question, I'm just curious about what it means. I don't want to make any assumptions about what somebody is saying. I'm curious about what they're saying. And is there something beneath that? And trying to help them to get beneath that. We don't realize that our own, the stuff that we haven't processed shows up. And that's why we're in spiritual direction. That's why we're in some kind of supervision. I believe every spiritual guide, every spiritual director should be in some kind of supervision, whether it's peer supervision or one-on-one, so that we are looking at our own stuff. So if you're talking, Lex, about something and it's sparking something in me, that's for me. That's not for me to share with you because this is your time in spiritual direction, but I have to have a time to process that and figure out what was coming up for me. And so I think it's kind of like Hevruta, but not exactly, if that helps.
So I want to get into this question a little bit about whether all mysticisms go to the same place or they don't. But I also want to really just think about the Jewish element of Jewish spiritual guidance. And I bring those both up together because there may be a variety of relationships between them, and I want to hear what your sense of it is. It feels to me like if all mysticisms or all spirituality ultimately go to the same place, if that's kind of the case, then what is the Jewish version of it about? Is it, and I think, I mean, I tend to describe it as something of a language, that it's, as would any cultural language be. So it makes more sense that if I'm born in France and I grew up speaking French, that if I want to have, for example, therapy, that if I went to a French speaking therapist, I'd probably have a better experience because it would just be more natural and it would be language that I have made other associations with in my life. So I'm sort of wondering whether that's the best way to understand Jewish spiritual guidance or are there ways in which maybe also to bring up French, right? Like now I don't really speak French, so I don't really know this, but people have said, right, that if you want to speak about love, you should speak it in French. And so I'm wondering whether Jewish might be especially good at speaking about spiritual guidance. And if so, how is it?
Yeah. At that level of we're all made of stardust, I think we get to that place in the mystical traditions. And Judaism is a particular orientation, flavor, language, culture that is different. And, one of the ways, and I think Lex was talking about this, is the relationship to community is so embedded in Judaism. So if you are attending to your spiritual life, it's not to become enlightened and sit on a mountaintop. It is so that you can be a better member of the community, so that you can do tikkun olam, so you can help repair the world. It's so that you can be better at that, so you can be a better participant in the community, so you can be better at not creating more brokenness. I've had both Jewish spiritual directors and non-Jewish spiritual directors. I have a current spiritual director who's a former nun who I've had for maybe close to 15 years, but she has a lot of Jews in her practice. So we talk Jewish and she gets it. I don't want to go to somebody that I have to explain it to. It feels different. First of all, we don't have, how do I want to say this? I'm putting it in the knot and I don't like to do that. I like to do it in this is what we have. And yet I can't think about, you know, the concept of, I would say I am a little challenged sometimes when my Christian or my non-Jewish directees start talking about their relationship with Jesus, because we don't have anything like that. You know, we might honor Moses or Miriam, but we don't feel that there is this divine being that somehow is continuing to talk to us, and we're trying to listen to that orientation. I would say that most of the Jews that I work with don't even have that from God. They're not expecting God to be talking to them. And yet you hear that language in Christian mysticism and in Christian spiritual direction. And so it's like what I've found mining Jewish spirituality is that Judaism has wonderful practices and orientations about being mindful and about being grateful and things that we ascribe to other traditions, but they're right here. We just kind of lost connection to them. And the beauty of Judaism is that Judaism Unbound is, you know, right in that territory, is that Judaism and Jewish spirituality and Jewish spiritual guidance has much to offer.
I do like the word spiritual being part of this, and of spiritual direction. And even as I consider other kinds of terminology and ways in which this, especially for Jews, is not just about God, which I think is part of what spiritual kind of points to, is, I mean, when people say I'm spiritual, not religious, often, not always, but often what they're saying is they actually do believe in something they might term God, or definitely term God, depending on the person. They just don't know that they're really down to sign up for one of the established religions that exists to connect to God. That's not the fullness of all spiritual, but not religious people, but I think it's a pretty reasonable percentage of them. And I am really, I want there to be like flashing lights, signs in the world that those people have options to explore their God stuff, like actually their God stuff. Like I think sometimes, you know, this podcast, I don't want to speak for Dan, but I do think both you and I, like the sense I get is we're like kind of comfortable with wherever we are with our theologies / non-theologies. Like I feel pretty good and anchored in my like pantheistic notion of the world. I'm really set there, and I actually don't need monthly sessions where I investigate that. I don't. That's not what I need. I need monthly sessions where I investigate my relationship, not to God, but to holidays or to my own aging or to the community I'm in or to how I build my friend group or to my relationship with my spouse. Like that's the kind of stuff I talked about in my spiritual direction sessions. But I want to say, like, a lot of people in my life, including people who I did not think this about at first, really have pretty deep, like regular mental and emotional like questions about God. Mm-hmm. Jews, non-Jews, I think it's really common. And I don't want it to sound like that's, you know, Jews don't have that. But I want there to be a thing called spiritual direction that does in fact shout to the people out there who want to talk about like, what do I think about God? What does it mean for me to experience God? What's happening when a sunset feels more than just pretty to me and I connect it to something more than that? What's happening when some mundane thing that I'm passing on the street as I walk by feels holy? Like, I think that does need to exist. And I think it's not just a small corner of humanity or Jews that wants to have that. The personal trainer thing is really apt because, you know, honestly, I think part of why people have personal trainers or why they go to gyms, it's just sort of a normal thing that people do. If it were a normal thing that everybody in the world, or not everybody, but like the percentage of people that go to the gym, if there were that percentage of people that were regularly engaged in deep spiritual practice and had a spiritual director, I think a lot of people would want that regular check-in about where are they at theologically? What does it mean to actualize that with embodied practice? And so my question is, like, coming from that, Would it be a better world if everybody had a spiritual director? We ask this of a lot of guests, like what would the better world be like where your organization or your initiative or your whatever was thriving and everybody signed up for it? Like my question is, would it be great for like 100% of humanity to have a spiritual director? Or is the goal actually not quite that? It's more that like, you know, some meaningful minority of humanity should have a spiritual director. And so we should take steps to make that possible. Like, what's the dream? What's the vision for whether within Judaism or broader, what it would be like for spiritual direction to not just be some woo sideline thing that a few people do, but instead a really core central society-wide known thing?
So first, I don't think everybody needs to have a spiritual director. I think some people are good at processing, exploring on their own, but I do think a lot more people than have a spiritual guide would benefit. Just like, you know, I'm a Jewish meditation teacher too. Just like assuming that if most people meditated, we'd have a lot less anger because we'd be settling our nervous system. We'd be noticing what's going on in our minds and we wouldn't have to be acting from instinct instead of our higher selves. I think if we had a chance to hold our questions, to be comfortable with the unknown, I think those are a couple of things that spiritual direction, spiritual guidance offer. It's like at the end of a session, you don't have to know any more than you did when you came in. We use the term discernment a lot in spiritual guidance. So discernment is not decision-making. It's something where you take time to let emerge what is the right answer to a question or what is the right next step. And you don't have to, it's a lech lecha. It's a, you know, from Torah, it's Abraham being told, go forth or go into something you don't know. The journey is what's important and not the destination. You don't have to know the destination. I think it's a great metaphor for spiritual direction. So you don't have to know where you're going. You're not going towards enlightenment. You're not going to be a better Jew, but you are on a path where you're paying attention to what is arising in you. How do you want to orient yourself? And do I think the world would be a better place if more people were in spiritual direction? Yes. If you are interested in having a place to explore questions that you don't have a place to explore other places, like before something's fully baked or fully formed, you have to have a place that feels safe and secure with a companion, then I think, yeah, spiritual direction, great.
So I want to build on Lex's question a little bit and maybe ask you some things. You aren't necessarily the person to answer them, but maybe you are, because I know you also have a background in the tech world and in thinking like business stuff. I'm thinking about like a very sort of non-spiritual element of the spiritual director question, which is sort of the economics of spiritual direction. Because as you're talking, I'm thinking, okay, so maybe not everybody needs this or should have, but it seemed like exactly like you said, I think a lot more people should. And it's just part of a bigger question that we've been asking on Judaism Unbound all along, which is like, what would it look like to live a Jewish life in 21st century America, at least, if not everywhere else in the world, if it didn't have to be restricted by the set of institutions that have defined Jewish life up till now? And I can imagine a world in which not everybody, but a lot of people, part of their experience of being Jewish is a monthly meeting with the spiritual director. I would do that. Like, I might call it a wisdom guide, but I would be really into that kind of thing. And my question is, like, do people value it? I'm not asking you, you know, what your rates are, but I have an inclination, I have an instinct that it would actually be cheaper to have a monthly session with a spiritual guide than what people are being asked to pay for synagogue dues that they're not participating at all in. I wonder if we could put out there a compelling architecture of Jewish life that would include spiritual guides, but also maybe it would include other ways in which we gather. And maybe there are ways in which people who are doing one-on-one spiritual guidance Are there ways in which they also gather communally, or we could imagine that they might in some future point, that there would be ways like one-on-one and also groups? I don't know. I'm just wondering if we could sort of paint some of the picture of what a alternate universe version of Jewish life might look like, where spiritual direction is at the core.
I love that question. I've never really thought about it, but maybe actually I have thought about it. I just haven't thought that it would ever be possible. First of all, within institutions, I think a spiritual director within an institution would be such a gift to have people know that they could go talk to somebody who is not their rabbi. They could talk about their spiritual experiences. That would be very cool. There are very, very few, but maybe you can count them on one hand, I think, of communities, congregations that have a spiritual director that is actually paid to do that in some capacity. And by the way, there is group spiritual direction, which I did in my community after I first got trained. And it was really lovely because people come together and they have then shared spiritual language. And so then they have somebody that can talk about the things that we don't normally sit and talk about in community. So that is another avenue for spiritual guidance and companionship. But I think especially because people are not affiliating with institutions and yet they're spiritual, right? So where are they getting their spirituality from? Where are they getting their support? Where are they finding somebody to talk to about their questions, about their lived experience, about what's, you know, it's hard. So they're off and they're doing it independently or not. I feel like I have to ask my brain to think bigger than I've been willing to think. Wouldn't it be lovely if somehow whoever supports other communal institutions, as usually federations and things like that, also supported something for people who are not going to be part of an institution, but they have a place? It's happening organically. So many people that you have on this program are, you know, starting Rosh Chodesh groups or going through Kohenet and they're becoming ritual facilitators. Or it's like, because that we got stuck in, okay, this is the model. You know, there's a rabbi and you get stuff in this institution, and it didn't work for everybody. It still works for people, but it didn't work for everybody. So this is one other avenue. I think there's possibilities, and economics sometimes short circuit those possibilities, because in spiritual directors have to be able to, if they're not in doing something else, how do they support themselves? So they need to be paid. It's a challenge. The economics make it a challenge. But if I could completely think out of the box and there would be some way for more people to have access to a way to just talk about their spiritual life, how wonderful.
Just a note that I can imagine that if somebody basically was trying out this new idea of a synagogue in, you know, that didn't, if we imagine a world in which it didn't already exist, and they start, you know, trying to make clear the economics of it, we would all be laughing, you know, be, yeah, like, that does not make sense. That is not a good idea.
Yeah.
And yet that's the power of the facts on the ground, you know, yeah, of making change from what something is,
yeah,
versus imagining what something could be. As we've been talking about this whole role of a spiritual director, it's making me wonder, what is the training of a spiritual director? What is the kind of person who should be one? I mean, it kind of feels like there's this possibility that you worry about in any profession where people are kind of giving advice to other people, that how do we make sure that that's always the best? Can you talk a little bit about how one becomes a,
yeah,
spiritual guide, and how one should become a spiritual guide, and all that, yeah, side of things?
And I also want to say that just reminds me just to flag, like, so the Yedidya Center for Jewish Spiritual Direction is pretty much not happening anymore. And it's because the Jewish community that funds things doesn't think that this is important. So what does that say about how we need to shift things? And coming back to your original question, a spiritual director usually trains in a spiritual direction training program. They have different lengths. The one through Aleph Hashba'ah is a 3-year program. And I believe that Institute for Jewish Spirituality, IJS, is going to be launching one this coming year in the fall. And the other Jewish spiritual direction training programs have all closed, either due to funding or, you know, people not running them. There are interfaith, interspiritual, and Christian spiritual direction programs, spiritual guidance programs. There's hundreds of them that people get. So most people get trained, but it's a non-licensed profession in the United States. It's considered a ministry, a calling, and we don't want to professionalize it. So you get the positives and the negatives with that.
On that note, I really want to call out that in general, we're supporters of, I don't know, titles, leadership, whatever, that are not just rabbi and cantor. I mean, we've looked at that from a number of angles. Like, I really hope that over the next few generations, we shift to a space where spiritual directors become more established, where Kohenet, Jewish priestesses, become more common, where Magids, Jewish storytellers, become more common. Like, this era of rabbi is the role or rabbi and cantor is the role is just not something I'm really super jazzed about. I think it asks too much expertise and awesomeness of, it asks people to be like really excellent at a million things, as opposed to asking certain people to be excellent at a few specific things. So that's a thought. But the closing question I have is, I'm imagining a parallel universe where COVID happened, but COVID happened and spiritual direction was already, before COVID, super common. I believe that in that universe, digital spiritual direction would have immediately been huge. I think a lot of people who would have had a spiritual director offline would have immediately migrated it to online. And the reason I think that, if we were to look at all the different forms of programming or learning or growing or experience that happen offline and ask which of those lose the least between offline and online, which can you experience with as little loss as possible? The lowest on the list would be singing. You lose like every form of ability to engage in communal singing online. But one-on-one meeting with a spiritual director, you don't lose. I mean, look, I would love to be in the same space with a spiritual director. I never have. Every single one of my 60-some once-a-month spiritual direction sessions with my spiritual director was with a guy who was in Gainesville, Florida. And I was in Rhode Island most of the time. I was able to do all sorts of different practices, meditations, all sorts of things, and just talk online. Has that been your experience when you talk about the people that you work with in spiritual direction? Is it mostly online at this point? Is it a mixture? Is it like, and across the field, what's become more common? Like, because from my perspective, I look out and I'm like, wow, I could have any spiritual director in the world. I actually don't necessarily need to have one that's in my community. And what strikes me deeply with spiritual direction is like, you have to have somebody that gets you in certain ways. I was privileged to have that in Aleph. There was a process where it wasn't random who I got. Like, it was a matching process where where the faculty got to know us and they knew the different people who were spiritual directors and they did a match. What are your experiences with digital spiritual direction? Am I onto something here? Might we be able to specifically build up this world, not just offline, but online?
Hell yes, is what I want to say. maybe I would say 5 to 10 years ago, there was conversation in spiritual direction space about, oh, phone spiritual direction and digital spiritual direction, it's not as good. Going into the pandemic, 70%, maybe more of my practice was already virtual. It was no shift for me. The five local people I had to shift. But I have people around the world that I do spiritual direction with, and I feel very, very honored. And especially if you're a Jew in Australia or New Zealand, and there's not, you know, like, I could probably think of more faraway places, but those are people that I know. You can have a spiritual director who you speak the same language, you have, you know, some underpinnings. And it's not, you know, the 20 Christian spiritual directors you could drive to. My practice now, everybody but one client is all on Zoom or phone or FaceTime. And I'm just starting to get inquiries again about local people. And it's like, wow, do I want to go back to local? I have to clean my office if I want to do that. I have to, you know, talk to my husband about people coming in the house again. And it's like, I kind of don't. And it took for me, because I started out in the face-to-face, it took kind of an internal shift where I could start feeling connected to the presence of the person on Zoom, but that now that's just so natural to me. I feel that connection to the directee, to the seeker, but I came from the old paradigm. I think people that are doing it now, hopefully, are recognizing that this is the one of the gifts that we got out of the pandemic was to see how much we could do virtually and how we could stay connected and how we could connect to people who we wouldn't normally have had access to. And my practice, I think, doubled over the course of the last 2.5 years, because when we're not having those face-to-face interactions and, you know, we're in such uncertain times and we need to build up our resilience, spiritual direction, spiritual guidance is a practice. And one of the things we haven't stated here is it in itself is a spiritual practice. So people say, I don't do spiritual practice. Well, you come to spiritual direction. That is a practice. That's a monthly practice where you're trying to listen to your spirit and to listen to that place that gives you meaning, that oneness. It is absolutely wonderfully suited for virtual space.
Thank you so much, Wendy, for coming back and joining us in a part of the year that isn't just Elul. We love you all times of year, not just 1 month out of 12. We want that to be very clear to all of our listeners. Thanks again. This has been a fantastic conversation.
Thanks, guys.
And thanks so much to all of you out there for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this conversation, and we hope that you'll tune in again in the future. A couple little notes. First off, we really meant it when we said that people should check out spiritual direction for themselves and see if it's a good fit. And we're giving that opportunity on our website. You can go to the show notes for this episode, and then there's a link where you can fill out a form, and you'll be able to be matched with a spiritual director, thanks to the wonderful Wendy Bernstein Lash. So we hope that many of you out there will give this a try for yourself. And another note before we leave, of course, the year is ending. 2022 is closing out, and we're heading into 2023. We are deeply appreciative for any amount of financial donation that you're able to allot for us with your year-end giving. You can do a one-time gift for the end of the year, or you can set up a monthly recurring gift that you won't even have to think about next year when we come around and ask again. You'll just have that monthly recurring donation so that you are helping us every single month of the flow of your year. So we hope that you'll do that at judaismunbound.com/donate. And the last little thing before we fully close out with the ways you can be in touch with us is just a little teaser. Stay tuned. There's going to be some news coming your way in the next few weeks related to the Un Yeshiva. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I'm planting the seed now so that you can rack your brain. You can get all excited because in not too long, there's going to be some awesome news. So we will now close things out fully by encouraging you to be in touch with us, which you can do via all of the following mechanisms. There's our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages. All of those are at Judaism Unbound for our handles. There's our website, judaismunbound.com. And there are our email addresses. Always send us questions, thoughts, comments, ideas, whatever you've got related to our podcast, related to the Un Yeshiva, related to our work, at dan@judaismunbound.com or lex@judaismunbound.com or both. So thank you so much for listening. And with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.